Turkey, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. A minute past the hour, and somehow or another, we managed to get started on time. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. It's Friday on the front porch, the 15th day of July, 2016. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Now we've got that all out of the way. Yes, we do. It is Friday on the front porch, so here in about 58 minutes and change, we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that takes place over at the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate indefatigable chat room and Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator Sparky, who is also in the room, in the chat room, if you'd like to. And he's inveterately, indefatigably, veteranly chat room moderating alongside occasional longtime Texas Betsy's with us this evening. Be good. Sparky, being a third stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space this evening, insofar as it would apparently be like folding space into the center of a star if he was to go out to the man cave. Right, yeah. Oh, it's going to be one of those nights, is it? VT Blom in the chat room. Is the turkey done yet? Ay, ay, ay. So I guess that's on the agenda this evening. Mm-hmm. Other things as well. This is, of course, a listener-supported broadcast operation. We are bereft of any ads for Bose Wave radios or flooring from Lumber Liquidators or steel buildings or mattresses made of Swedish design from foam developed by NASA. We don't have any ads for the herbal hair regrowth tonic capsules or make anything else bigger, whatever. We can rebuild him. No, we don't have any of that. We run this independently, which provides a certain degree of freedom to what we can talk about and how we can approach them. Nope, sorry, Steve from Georgia Stan. No, buy gold, silver. No. Although I do have some neighbors who will happily sell you some copper if you would like. Oh my God. No, we exist on listener contributions, and in order to close the week at the good, we need to bring in about $280 this evening. 10 at 28, 28 at 10, 1 at 280, 2 at 140, 4 at 70, 8 at 35, 16 at 1750, 32 at 875, Yeah, 875, I think. I'm easily confused when we get into the maths. Yes, there's an S on the end of that, maths. Right. If you would like to help out, please feel free to go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com under the tab Contribute. Click on that, If you would like to become a monthly subscriber, we just love our monthly subscribers. We adore them. And just click on make this a recurring donation, $10, $20, whatever you want to do. We're still trying to get to the first 100, which would be huge. And then fill out everything else except the part about, well, you know, the part where if you answered it, you'd have to kill us. You know, what you do and who you do it for. Right, exactly. So that's all there. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, and several people do, you can always make Boss Man Wayne's Day by sending checks or money orders made payable to The Horn. To The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. And if you'll send me a note, I can include that in any given evening's fundraising. And I can also alert Boss Man Wayne to leave the spider-proof gloves when he reaches in the truck when he reaches into the echo chamber there at the UPS store. Okie doke. So, VT Blom, no soup in a bucket either. I'm gonna hold back on any thoughts about the Turkish coup for a little bit, because information is way too sketchy at this point. It appears to be a military coup. I mean, you know, when they start driving tanks down down your street, and it's not a parade, and they're ready to, you know, and they're loaded for bear or turkey. It's generally, you know, not a friendly act. But Turkey's kind of a mess these days, and I'm not entirely at all clear on who's behind it and who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. Who the bad guys are, or who the bad guy was, seems pretty well established. In France, on the other hand, the death toll, the last I saw, 84, with many, many more critically injured. One guy in what appears to have been what we call around here a straight truck, and don't worry, we won't the so-called developed world will not get this right. We will continue to think that this is something we can solve by bombing more people, when in fact nothing could be further from the truth. Meanwhile, I had a very good and considered note from our buddy Scott in Sweden, who was responding to the whole Bernie or bust notion, and actually and took time to sit down and write out a quite cogent note, and I wanted to make sure that I shared it. Our buddy Scott writes, "For the busters. Not voting for Hillary out of pride or principle. My message to the I refuse to vote for Hillary family members: when building the house of one's dreams, if you see something going dangerously wrong, a sag under the basement wall and a giant crack forming, or dry-rotted, termite-nested main beams installed by a sleazy contractor, or a fire breaking out near dawn in linseed-soaked rags, you pause and fix what you already have from destruction. So fix the goddamn Trump problem now, and then return to building what we need by 2018. In a parliamentary system, and our buddy Scott speaks from experience, he lives with one on a daily basis there in Sweden, In a parliamentary system, one can vote one's conscience, because after the election, the small parties may be required by the larger winning party to form a governing bloc. America does not have that system. So, in America, one must vote in the general election the choice America presents, which is almost always the bold, lesser... Wait, okay, I think this means reverb. Lesser of two evils. It's designed that way. You can't play basketball by baseball rules. You have to know what rules are enforced for the activity engaged in. It's an old adage, but no less true for that, that it is in primaries where you get to vote your heart, but the primaries are now... Wait a minute. Over! Now is the time for Act Two, the nose-holding vote round. So face it, citizen. Play by the crappy rules handed us for this required round, but never stop working to change the rules for the better for upcoming rounds. Let our disgust for this crappy choice be the motive to come out even harder, even stronger for progressive choices in the next round. But now, it's time to douse Trump like a smoldering rag beside the turpentine bottles. Take the steps in correct order. The house can be built once the foundations have been repaired and the rotten beams replaced. Take the steps in the correct order. Signed, our buddy Scott. Yes, 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 I know. Anatole in the chat room. The lesser of two evils is still evil, Mr. Bob. I get that. But when the gap between the two evils is so is as broad as what it is now, it's almost like it's not the lesser of two evils anymore. It's more like evil, and damn, I wish we had a better candidate. Barclay in the chat room says this argument the author is making, namely our buddy Scott, is the same tired argument we hear every election, and it never changes. You know why it never changes? Because the system doesn't change. Because they're still not putting "I want a pony" on the ballot. It's not a parliamentary system. It's first past the post. Now, the system was slightly different when the Constitution was first ratified. Back then, whoever came in second got to be vice president. But you know what? There was not jack diddly squat for whoever came in third. You know, Jill Stein's great, 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 great granddaddy. Maybe. I don't know. Nothing. Bupkis for whomever comes in third. Not even a Laurel and Hardy handshake. But the guy who came in second did get to be vice president. And you know what? That turned out to be not a good idea. That was one of those things that the framers went back to early on and said, we kind of got to fix this. Because, let's see, John Adams was George Washington's vice president for 2 terms, 8 years. And said it was the most useless job ever created in the mind of man, or something along those lines. So then he runs for his own term in office, John Adams does, becomes the second president of the United States, and lo and behold, the man who has become his mortal political enemy, Thomas Jefferson, winds up his vice president. Now, wouldn't that be great? That would be fun. Can you imagine Hillary being president with Donald Trump as vice president? Or, hey, flip the two around. I think it became readily apparent to the framers that this was a recipe for future disaster. And so they fixed it. But it is what it is. I will try to do that, maybe during the break or after the program or something. Michael and Madison just asked. Anyway, you could post Scott's email with his permission, of course, on Facebook. I'd love to share it. I don't think Scott would object. We'll just copy and paste and remove all identifying marks and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. When Scott got down to the part about doing it in the right order, naturally it reminded me of a Monty Python bit where they were interviewing the great Shakespearean actor, and it turns out he wasn't so great after all. It turns out he was a bit of a twit. Well, you know, that's what my old director used to say to me. We've got all the words there, Thomas. Now all we have to do is get them in the right order. And it turns out he knew exactly how many words each Shakespearean character he had played had to speak. All we've got to do is get them in the right order. Time to douse Trump like a smoldering rag beside the turpentine bottles. And that's the absolute truth. I mean, I didn't get my secret DNC decoder ring in the mail or in my box of super sugar frosted sugar bombs this morning either. But I do know. I do know that Donald J. Trump, millionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht, is a looming goddamn disaster. And you don't get two choices. Sorry. Wish it was otherwise. Ain't gonna be but one of two people going to be president of the United States of America. The greatest country in the history of the world, on earth, in the universe, now, today, forever, under God, amen. Just won't. I said a couple of minutes ago that the one thing we do know for certain about the horror that was unleashed last night in Nice. Is that we will get it wrong. We'll get it wrong. The French will get it wrong. The Germans will get it wrong. The British will get it wrong. All the Western powers will get it wrong. Because they will assume that somewhere along the way, just a little bit more bombing will convince people that they ought not do that. I don't think that's going to work. I really do have to think it's going to take something a little bit more along the lines of thinking with something other than our guns and our bombs and our engines of death and destruction. You know, anytime we respond with anything other than death and destruction, the right wing always hollers, "See, there they go, being sensitive again." Well, if you don't have some sensitivity somewhere along the way, responding to everything in your best Og the caveman, Og break things, Og angry, Og feeling hurt, Og break, Og blast, Og go boom, Og kill women and children. That teach them. So far it hasn't worked, has it? Nope. So, I mean, do they? You know, why? Because see, I got an interesting note from Isaac regarding who the guy in the truck turned out to have been. Guess what? Not, emphasis on the word, not a hardcore Muslim extremist. Lawaj Boulel from a Tunisian town near the seaside city of Sousse, where 38 people, including 30 Britons, were gunned down by terrorists in June 2015. French citizen. Everyone interviewed, because in the rest of the world they do the same thing we do here, because, you know, for-profit media. You run out and you stick a camera and a microphone in somebody's face and say, "Tell me about your neighbor who did all that killing." And the neighbor says, "Well, he seemed kind of a quiet type, kind of kept to himself, more or less of a loner. I never would have specked this." And, well, that's not exactly what they got when they went to interview his friends, his neighbors. He was a divorced father of three who had become depressed following the breakdown of his marriage. According to the article from the Telegraph, neighbors told the channel he was not particularly interested in religion, adding that he preferred girls and salsa. By girls and salsa, I do not know if it means the musical and dance style or the bright, tart, and tangy and refreshing chopped vegetable side dish. Neighbors described him as depressed and unstable, even aggressive. They chalked it all up to his marital and financial problems. One neighbor told BFM TV he was more into women than religion. He didn't pray, and he liked girls and salsa. There's the girls and salsa remark. But that's okay, because what it means, and if you are watching the for-profit media today, you know this to be a fact, what it means is that is coming to get your Bible, is coming to get your mama's Bible, and they're going to turn your local Wally World into a heap of smoking rubble. Be afraid, America. Be very afraid. The is a coming. And as you may remember from Prayer Meeting Wednesday, they're probably going to hunt down the Christians using Pokemon Go, because Mongo, just pawn in great game of life. Come on. It can't hurt anything to maybe bomb some more people, can it? And see, that's the big, now there's the big question, Texas Betsy. Texas Betsy says salsa is more a condiment than a side dish. No, I don't know. But apparently that is one of the great philosophical arguments of our age. Is salsa a condiment? I saw a story a couple of years ago that stuck in my head about the fact that salsa, there's now more salsa sold than ketchup. And the ketchup industry was complaining, saying, "Well, that is entirely unfair. Salsa is not ketchup. Ketchup is not salsa. They are not the same thing." I treat it like a side dish. I really do. I think it's its own thing. There's so many different kinds of it. You know, I'm real fond of the tomatillo, the salsa verde, whatever. Just tangy and tart, and just wakes your taste buds up. And apparently, this guy, the guy who killed nearly 100 people, he was fond of salsa too. Although etymologically, I guess if you go back to the Spanish origins of the word, it would more qualify as a condiment. But then again, is sauce béarnaise, is that a condiment? Or is it a sauce? See the problems you get into? Yeah, and this is the stuff of which world wars are made. No, Anatole, ketchup is not a fruit. Ketchup is a vegetable. That's what Ronnie Reagan said. Tomatoes are berries, not vegetables. Wait, that means ketchup's a fruit. We may never sort this out. See what happens? See? Yeah. I'm and then there's the whole the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini thing, where out of respect for the French, I'm gonna withhold my naming, and then it's gonna be Mike Pence. I trust that you have by now seen the first campaign logo by the Trump Pence campaign. You remember, again, the cultural back references. Do you remember, not in the early heyday of Saturday Night Live, but one of the later iterations, who was it that played Dr. Ruth? And Barkway says, what's a potato in the chat room? Oh my God, now we've got it. It's a tuber! But I can't remember who it was that played, and somebody will tell me by email in a moment. She played Dr. Ruth, and through the course of whatever she was talking about, she would eventually bring her index finger toward, her left hand would be, the thumb and index finger would be forming a circle, and she would get close to penetrating that circle with the index finger of her right hand, and stop that. And it was a bit. Well, just as the primary season, the GOP primary season, showed that, yes, indeed, under the right set of circumstances, we can actually talk about the penile endowments of presidential candidates, and whether or not, in fact, Donald Trump is hung or hanged or whatever the proper version of the verb in that case is. Well, they've done it again with their logo, with the T in Trump penetrating the P in Pence. I could swear that while he was governor of Talibandiana, Mike Pence signed a law somewhere along the way that probably makes that kind of thing illegal. It's precious. So, do you care? By the way, for those who were anxiously waiting, and I wasn't one of them, to hear the stirring political address of Tim Tebow, little Timmy Jebo, there at the GOP convention in Cleveland. Well, apparently that's not going to happen either. And they're not even going to let us have the fun of mocking Godzilla from Wasilla. Talk about a slap, unless it's like one of those last-minute things where she comes out from behind the curtain, like in WWE, and the announcer inside the arena in Cleveland goes, "Oh, no!" Godzilla from Wasilla is not on the bill. Even after she went out and stumped for Trump, and did it, she's got to be feeling particularly left out. So, Scott in San Diego, in regard to the Trump-Pence logo, Trump-Pence none the wiser. One wonders if the new Trump-Pence campaign logo is indicative of the level of creative thought that will go into future policy or political decisions by this team. Oh, and given the surnames involved, I'm not sure I'd be so quick to emphasize letters that make most people think of an item associated with wiping one's butt. That's right. TP for America. America is going to get TP'd. Every spring, the toilets explode. But there's some... there are real larger considerations. I mean, I'm not evading reality. We know Hillary likes to bomb places. She's very fond of bombing places. She likes to vote for bombing places, and she likes to set up bombing policy. But can you, Marty got that. You're talking about Delta, sir. Yes. Can you imagine? I mean, are you nervous? I'm nervous. The business in Turkey, last night, the horror in France. Who knows what comes next? Our own myriad horrors related to race and oppression in the United States of America. A crumbling middle class. A hopeless youth. That is plenty weird for me. With even if you decided that, you know, he's a secret Republican, he is still the coolest, calmest dude who has inhabited the White House in a very, very long time. It's weird enough with Barack Obama at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and he doesn't rattle much. Now, just time travel for a minute. Just flash yourself forward to, Trump sitting in the White House with this stuff going on. Because here's a hint. He's going to be. If it doesn't turn around real quick, he's going to be. I saw a clip of ancient correspondent Bob Schieffer blathering away on CBS News this morning, talking about the disastrous poll results for Hillary. He said, I don't see how she sees this as anything but a disaster, mainly because it's a disaster. The Mar-a-Lago Mussolini is succeeding in closing the gap of hatred. There's a hatred gap there, and he's almost gotten to the point where as many people hate Hillary as hate him. I mean, this more than any other election in American political history has become a race to the bottom. And, you know, with things like that, where gravity's involved and physics, the bottom wins. And it's terrifying. In Turkey, the bridges across the Bosphorus have been closed. You know, the bridge that connects Asia to Europe, or does so at least in our arbitrary imaginations. The Turkish capital, Ankara, is on lockdown. Meanwhile, in France, they're talking about what a horrible, dastardly, and cowardly act it was last night. Oh, yes, absolutely. Okay. But just as we found out in Dallas, just as we found out in Orlando, you know, trying to pin ISIS on this so that we can be, more comfortably terrified because we've got somebody we can point to that's, they definitely said Bruga Bruga. It's not nearly as simple as we would like for it to be. And so today, in various news clips, I saw various governmental people talking about, well, you know, we've got to have clear communications with our military so that our military can run with our military. Military options. And I can't help but think that even if one makes some sort of terrorist connection in France to ISIS, they're still really behind the curve. Because, and I don't want them to, but they're really not very good at this. I mean, if you want somebody who can go and wreak havoc and open up can after can on the 55-gallon barrel level of agony and misery and mayhem and did I mention agony and death, maiming and torment? You're really going to be hard pressed to outdo us. Oh, you've got a truck. Oh, look, you've got some dynamite vests. Well, how nice for you. You've got some AK-47s. We've got drones with Hellfire missiles, and we will blast the living shit out of a wedding party just because some pimply-faced kid in Topeka couldn't find that last Pokemon. We're good at that civilian death toll thing. Real good. And ISIS, ISIL, Daesh, whatever, ain't anywhere near to catching up. And just as I remarked last night that the United States does not have the guts for a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, we also don't have the guts to have a real conversation about why over there is what over there is and why we're so scared over here. The funny thing being that there's an abundance of evidence. There's lots and lots and lots of evidence to show exactly why the area of the world that we refer to as the Middle East is an abattoir, and why the abattoir of the Middle East is spilling over into Europe. As the Romney folks screamed throughout the summer of 2012, we made that! We made that. Do you suppose in the corridors of power anybody sits around going, yeah, well, here's another chicken come home to roost? Because one gets the sense that they're flying, they're moving in flocks now. And of course, you know, I predicted this stuff as far back as 2003, 2004. that there are long memories among the aggrieved peoples that we whose innocent loved ones we kill. And that even if we bring them $5,000 U.S. American cash money, that ought to take the sting out of being an orphan. It's not going to make them any less furious. Marty with a quote. The last line from beneath the Planet of the Apes after the doomsday weapon has been set off. Marty says the line that may come true. In one of the countless billions of galaxies in the universe lies a medium-sized star and one of its satellites, a green and insignificant planet, is now dead. Yes, yes, at 19 minutes before the hour, we are just a little ray of sunshine, aren't we? So, all of that, you know, all of that is out there on the table for your consideration, our consideration. And just because we wrap stuff, kind of put a little bow on things over the weekend, a sort of double-barreled a story worth noting for two separate reasons. One of which is, you know, there's nowhere in this country that you're not going to find the nastiness that has become the vicious racism that has begun to gone from a simmer to a full rolling boil in this country. To wit, Oregon. Rodney Bloomberg is facing criminal charges. He went up and threatened a man who lives in his neighborhood. The charges say that Rodney Bloomberg directed racial slurs at the man there in Oregon, but he told him to leave. The man lives in Cresswell, which is a rural community south of Eugene. The accused, Rodney Bloomberg, is said to have told the man, black people, quote-unquote, get hung in these parts. And there is, of course, a mugshot photo of Rodney Bloomberg. Proud, upstanding. My God, how many necks does that man have? And they're all red. So there's just the horrifying quality of that story. But then there's how the story gets told. This particular iteration of it comes from Raw Story. And this is one of those journalism moments proving that copy editing is dead. Work with me here. Police told the station that Rodney Bloomberg was among four men that approached the victim in a truck with a Confederate flag attached to it. Okay, let's back up so we can get the full context. An Oregon man is facing criminal charges for allegedly threatening an African-American man to the point the victim no longer feels safe living in his neighborhood, KEZI reports. Police told the station that Rodney Bloomberg was Blomberg, was among four men that approached the victim in a truck with a Confederate flag attached to it. You got that? Police told the station that Rodney Blomberg was among four men that approached the victim in a truck with a Confederate flag attached to it. Now, considering that the African-American man who no longer feels safe living in his own neighborhood was the recipient of a not at all veiled threat about lynching, I find it surprising that he would have been in a truck with a Confederate flag attached to it. but that's what the sentence says. Police told the station that Rodney Blomberg was among four men that approached the victim in a truck with a Confederate flag attached to it. Throw me down the stairs, my hat. Throw Mama from the train a kiss. Mm-hmm. So, Blomberg is free after posting a $2,000 bond. He's been charged with second-degree intimidation. And I guess $2,000, that'll show him. No word on whether he'll plead guilty or go to trial. I remember when a man who was not that far different in appearance from Rodney Blomberg made a throat-slashing gesture at a man and his little child at a 4th of July picnic up on Cayford Mountain one time. Took practically an act of Congress to get the state police to finally charge him with anything. And when he went and pled guilty, the magistrate imposed no fine, ordered him to pay court costs, and told him to go and sin no more. I don't know. Surely to goodness. That part of Oregon will take take the issue more seriously than that. Brother Deacon Gerald, with a comment says, "You bring up an excellent point, Bob. As I learned that the attack in France was suspected terrorism, I immediately thought to myself, it must be is. Then I thought to myself, why are you thinking that? You don't know the facts yet. While I don't normally jump to conclusions like that, I'm going to admit that even I am not completely immune to the right-wing hate machine. Seems that their hate game is very effective, even on progressives." Sure. Who didn't look at that and go, well, they did it again? Because we've been conditioned to it, haven't we? We just expect it, and I'm subject to it too. Every time some horror transpires in this country, I find myself saying, please don't let it be a Muslim. Please don't let it be a Muslim. Please don't let him be black. Please don't let him be black. Because I know what a firestorm of white, and I do mean white hot rage, will be engendered in our low information, low IQ, white right wing in this country if the person doing the bad thing turns out to be, you know, black or Muslim. You know that. I know that. There's not really any doubt. But, you know, maybe we can get a little... I just love that. Police told the station that Rodney Blomberg was among four men that approached the victim in a truck with a Confederate flag attached to it. Which makes me wonder if the police actually said that to the reporter who created the report, why the reporter didn't say, really? He was in a truck? The guy that got threatened and it had a Confederate flag attached to it? And they came up and threatened to hang him? Is that why? What? Hey. Oh, one other little thing. I sit around sometimes just thinking about stuff. And I was thinking about the fact that it seems apparent at this point that the police are scared to death. The police are scared and other people wind up dead. Because they never know when somebody they're approaching is going to be armed to the teeth and pose a potential threat to, you know, their cop lives. Because after all, blue lives matter, right? And I know it's way, I know this is just way crazy, but I'd like for us just to ponder it for a moment. If nobody but the police were allowed to carry firearms, and I want to be clear about this because, one, I know I'm talking about a fantasy world. And I'm not talking about eliminating the right to keep and bear arms. I'm not talking about getting rid of the Second Amendment. I'm talking about carrying guns in public. Because one of the things that makes the police so terrified, and they are, is the number of people wandering around with guns. Maybe they're less terrified of some people than others. Maybe that's bias. I don't think there's any maybe about it. If a 62-year-old white guy can take pot shots at people with a shotgun and wave it around on the edge of the road and lives to tell the tale, but a guy who's black and merely says, "I have a firearm," winds up all dead, it's kind of hard to avoid the obvious conclusion. But if we were, say, as a country, which one wonders if we still are, it seems more and more we're 50 little petty nations. But if, as a country, we were to ban people from just carrying guns anywhere, because the NRA, of course, all along has said, you know, it takes a good man with a gun to stop a bad man with a gun. Problem being, of course, you can never tell. I mean, a guy could wear a shirt that says good guy with a gun, and he could still be a bad guy with a gun. I know. Bad guys play that way sometimes. But if we could get the guns off the streets, and I'm talking about the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, amosexuals, if we could get them to stop carrying their guns around. And the NRA always says, well, you know, the law means nothing to thugs and criminals. They'll still have guns. Okay. I agree. So if all the good guys don't have guns, and the cops see somebody with a gun, then the cops have a lot less to worry about. Because then they'll know that that's a bad guy with a gun. It almost makes a little bit of sense, doesn't it? Almost. Almost. I'd kind of like for them not to be so scared, the police. And they are scared. Turns out that Geronimo Yanez, the man who shot Philando Castile, took a police training course called, wait, we're going to need the reverb for this, Bulletproof Warrior, back in 2014. It's hosted and sold by an outfit called Caliber Press. Caliber, get it? See what they did there? They have changed the name of Bulletproof Warrior lately to Interaction and Influence. The co-owner of Caliber Press is Jim Glennon. He also teaches the seminar. And he said, we had different calls from some agencies literally saying the word warrior has such a bad connotation, we're not comfortable sending people there. Well, it turns out that, and it was that back when Geronimo Yanez took it, Bulletproof Warrior teaches cops how to be paranoid. Mm-hmm. The Minneapolis Star Tribune has done a lot of the legwork on this. They also found out that Yanez took a another seminar from Caliber called Street Survival, which has nothing to do with Lynyrd Skynyrd, by the way. He also took Officer Survival. Here's the thing. The executive director of the International Association of Directors of Law Enforcement Standards and Training is a guy named Michael Beckar. He's been to the seminars. And when he saw it, he said everything they were doing made the police officers very paranoid. At some point, they wouldn't even stop a car without three backups. A spokesman for the Houston, Texas Police Department said, some of their instructions, not what we instruct. So what happens? Well, on the second day of the seminar, when Officer Yanez was there, they watched footage of shootouts between police and civilians. One individual who saw it said every time a video came up where the officer hesitated, the seminar presenter, Glennon, would stop and he'd say, this is a point where there should have been a reaction. He should have engaged. So the police were literally being taught, instructed, to shoot, to kill. Meanwhile, Caliber Press says, according to their CEO, Lisa Gitchell, our mission is to save everyone's lives. We go to bed every night knowing that we did the right thing. We train officers to treat people with dignity and respect before they kill them. Okay, I added the before they kill them part. Yeah. Okay, so that's the filibobster for the evening. It's time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. courtesy of Arthur. We're at war with radical Islam. Frankly, we should nuke the entire Eastern Hemisphere, frankly. Earth or Ed, something Newt Gingrich might have said. Okay, I made it up. But it sounds so damn, you know, convincing. It's so Newty. All right, break time. Hey, thanks to Stock and Larry helping us knock down the fundraising goal this evening. And thanks to Bill. Hi, Bill. Thank you. We now have only the regular $200 to raise this evening. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. $200 to go, one at 200, two at 100, four at 50, eight at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at six and a quarter, and 64 at $3.13, because we round up. Hopefully that'll happen in the next 2 hours or so, for there are bills, yea, verily, to be paid. All right, let's take a break. Sparky, fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable machine. If you can't use Skype, and there are myriad reasons why one might not be able to, then we have the stress line here for you as well. You'll hear the group will hear you, I'll hear both, and everybody will hear us all. And that number, of course, is 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. From anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Joel, just send a contact request that says Friday on the Front Porch or FOTFP or Horn or something to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc. If you want to participate in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is Friday on the Front Porch. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Did it again. I made you believe we're more than just friends. Oh baby, it might seem like a crush, but it doesn't mean that I'm serious. 'Cause to
Yeah, that's about enough of that, but I couldn't resist just the oops, I did it again aspect of it. hopefully you'll forgive me at some point in time. 4 minutes past the hour on this Friday on the Front Porch, and let's run over and check in right straight away with Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
What's happening?
How am I sounding? Am I okay?
You're good.
Oh, okay.
I can hear you.
Sometimes I wonder this heat, well, outside heat. 103 today.
Yeah, there's a good reason you're not in the man cave.
Guess what else is hot weather has caused or something else caused?
Trouble
There's
with the...
There's been an algae bloom on Shasta Lake.
Oh, yucky. Well, for the first time in eons, interior Northern California has something in common with Florida. I thought you were going to say that the tomatoes were wilting in the heat or something.
No, the tomatoes are good. They're doing great. If you got salsa, speaking of salsa earlier, if you got any salsa recipes, send them to me.
I don't. I'm betting they're members of the.
Well, send them to Bob and he'll forward them to me.
So are the tomatoes rolling in earnest now, and you've got to have something to do with them?
Oh, the tomatoes, the plants are just heavy with them. I mean, and they're just firing off. I gave a bunch to a buddy of mine the other day, who came over and shot the shit with me. Well, your show was going on. I missed an hour or two of the show. He really likes them. And then when he was getting ready to leave, he's 73 years old, a concrete guy, contractor in town, and an old family friend. But he lifts up the center armrest of his truck, and he has three pistols there. And I, the fuck you need three guns for? Won't one do?
I don't know. One for each hand, and I don't know.
He didn't explain it. He just saying it. Well, this is 38. This is the 357.
Oh God!
And I think he had a 9mm too.
Well, that's in case you need to squeeze off 19 rounds.
So anyway, that's been my week dealing with the tomatoes. I have company supposedly coming tonight from the mountains. And they're going to be hot when they get here.
Yeah, coming down out of the cool comfort of the.
They're at 4,000 foot elevation where they live, and it's not that much cooler up there. It's 90s usually.
Wow, I guess you got to get over toward Roger before it cools off some, huh?
Well, the coast has the coast are always cool because. Because of the ocean.
Yeah, nice ocean breeze. Well, let's run over to the stress line real quick and say hello to Jim in Louisiana, Stan. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob?
What do you know?
Oh, not much. I'm still going green, but, you know, like you said, it doesn't really matter what you do in Louisiana, Stan. Kind of like you in West Virginia, but I got to get my little protest.
Well, you know, right, and maybe somebody can decide to do the right thing in an important state because, you know, you're providing a conscience vote in Louisiana.
Could happen. Maybe it's sending some sort of cosmic money for the universe.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, you're out there working for the team. Quiet day there on,
Yeah, we had some.
You're kind of breaking up a little bit on us, Jim. Well, we'll try back in a minute. Let's see. Let's check in with the rest.
10-4, I'm out.
Yeah, Steve from Georgia, Stan, cool.
Hey, Bob, Rick had a conference call to go on. He said it was at 4:30, so he might be.
Okay. Oh, he's out there. Yeah, he's out there being billable. Okay. What's happening, Steve?
Oh, not too much, Bob. What's going on with you, man?
I don't know. Did I see you were having router problems or something in the chat room?
Yeah, we had some wicked storms last night. There's no global warming, but anyhow, it zapped everything. I mean, my amplifier and extenders, everything. So I've been up since the wee hours trying to get all this fixed, but I seem to have it sorted out, so all is well with the world.
Beautiful. How many shots of brown liquor were required for the fix?
Well, Miss Karen won't let me hit any of that till afternoon, so not that many.
Ah, curses. You probably would have gotten it fixed quicker. or maybe just not cared a lot earlier,
or just went back to bed. And
you mentioned hellacious storms. We got the I'm still among the fortunate, but another chunk of West Virginia got the snot kicked out of it overnight. Massive storms caused flooding in Putnam and Cabell counties, which are over on the western end of the state. Putnam County is between Kanawha County and Cabell County. Cabell County, of course, borders the Ohio River. One dead, lots of people out of their homes, a state of emergency declared. It's almost enough to make you think that maybe if we'd quit denying climate change, the goddess of irony would quit trying to remind us how real it is.
Well, they laughed Al Gore out of the room, but he was on to something, Bob. He was.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I'm surprised that Mike's been able to get off the shows that he has. I'm not that far from him, and we've been getting hit with some really, really hellacious storms that just come out of nowhere. Just nowhere.
Well, it's not that they come out of nowhere for us. I mean, you can kind of watch the map and see where they're coming from. My buddies up in northern Wisconsin got hammered earlier this week and late last week. As I mentioned on the program, I'm very fond of the area up there where the Bad River and the Pinocchi Hills are, because I mean it's just first time I was ever there. I just knew I was somewhere special. And this time of year, ordinary flow for the Bad River is about 40 cubic feet per second. A few days ago, it was running at 40,000 cubic feet per second.
Oh God! It's a wonder you don't need to build an ark.
Not me, them.
Right.
Huge chunks of road washed out. The bridge on the highway that runs between Ashland and Odena just gone. But nobody died. Nobody died. And that's the best part of it.
That's very fortunate. Now, I'm glad you're okay and you're still able to broadcast. Sincerely.
Well, I appreciate it. I really do. And you know, like I said, we've been very fortunate. We got knocked in the teeth by the derecho 4 years ago, but we're on high enough ground that, well, let's see. The power did blink twice last night. And the rule of thumb around here is if it blinks once and comes back, okay. Twice and comes back, okay. If it blinks
third time, you're out.
Three strikes and you are out. And it's time to go and wish you'd filled up the gas jug so that you could fire up the generator.
Especially now in this heat. I mean, my goodness, we're not accustomed to it. And it makes you wonder, you know, how did our forefathers survive? Well, the houses were built a lot differently back then. They had high ceilings and whatnot. And right now, our houses aren't built for this intense heat that we're getting.
No. You know, this house that I'm in was built in 1937, and one of the first things that was done was my grandmother planted hemlock trees right along the front edge of the property out by the road, because they served as a block against the dust coming off the road, and they also provided shade for the front part of the house. And so even when it was blazing hot, it was, you know, considerably cooler thanks to them. Naturally, the power company came along and said, those trees got to go. We hate us some trees. We're the power company.
And if you'll notice, a lot of the houses that were built back during the Oak Alley Plantation era, they were built where the air would come down through a holler, or however you want to pronounce
holler,
it.
Holler, you said it right.
Holler, okay. And would strategically go from the front door through the back. Well, we don't have any of that. No,
actually, I don't know if it's a satellite branch or a project of, but there's an architecture school inside Auburn University in Alabama, and they've actually done a lot of work trying to rejuvenate those construction ideas as a passive means of reducing energy consumption.
Well, that would make sense. I mean, they tolerated it. Of course, they didn't. They didn't know any difference, but they tolerated it as well. But, you know, if they would have had the structures we have, just plopped in the middle of just wherever they felt like plopping it, with no air circulation, it may have been a different story. You know?
Right. Well, I mean that learning, that whole learning thing, it's an ugly little challenge.
So who else is out there with us tonight, Bob?
Let's see. Well, Jim is still there on the stress line. I don't know if we've got him back or not. Let's see. Rick's billable Rick.
I'm here now.
Billable Rick is back. He is no longer billing.
Nice. Well, I'm going to toss it back to you guys. I'll jump back in here later on.
All right. Thanks, okay. Steve.
All right. I appreciate you all.
No worries. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Bob. What's going on, man?
You're done with the billable portion of your afternoon?
Not quite. I have a call in about 15 minutes I got to deal with. I'll be back, though, after that. So, I'm trying to bill as much as I can. I've got, I figured I have to average about 60 billable hours a week between now and the second week of September. So I'll be a busy guy here.
Oh, man, we're back to it, aren't we?
We're back to it, man. I thought I'd learned my lesson, but, you know, I guess it's just the stubborn German in me, you know?
Well, that or the need to run out to all of those concerts and stuff.
Well, there you go. Yeah, speaking of that, it seems like every time I go to a concert, earlier in the day, there's a terrorist attack. Remember the one where they, the Bataclan or whatever, Bataclan in, Paris, you know, the concert hall, they had that attack. And then later that night, I went to see Collective Soul with my son. Yesterday, I was scheduled to see Boston and Dennis DeYoung led off and then Boston. And, of course, they had the attack in Nice. So it sort of takes the buzzkill off of the concert, you know, unfortunately. You know, and then last week, of course, we had all the, the guy who went all rogue on the police officers, you know?
Yeah.
So we've had like a lot of bad shit happening. But I think Dennis DeYoung put it best last night when he, you know, right at near the start of the show, he basically said, you know, we got such a crazy world, but you know what? I'm not going to stop rocking, and we're still going to do the show, you know. So, you know, and I mean the problem with this attack is, I mean, anybody who owns a truck could have done it. It's a lone wolf attack. I mean, I don't know if that's been emphasized in the news, but it doesn't look like this guy was being directed by anybody. Looks like he was self-directed, kind of like that guy in the Orlando shootings, and kind of like the San Bernardino
and also like the guy in the Orlando shootings. It looks like it may have had not a damn bit to do with Islamic terrorism.
Okay.
He was pissed off. I mean, all his neighbors said he was pissed off because his wife left him and his finances were gone to shit.
Okay. Well, I guess that kind of begs the question. It's like, well, why don't you just go ahead and, you know, suck on your exhaust pipe then instead of, you know, kill everybody else, you know? But if some people just don't think clearly, obviously, if you're that distraught, you know?
Hi, Bob.
Well, hey, who said that? Was that you?
No, this is me. This is VT Blom.
Hey, Scott. Yeah, hey, Scott, what's happening?
Not much.
We now have a fraternity of Scots, too.
I've seen that. There's at least two of us.
Three.
Three. Oh, good. We got the triad.
There you go. Great Scott.
depends on who you talk to.
Right.
Rick, you're forgetting about the death by cop and the headlines that he knows he's going to get.
Yeah, that's true.
That's how on his way to the 70 virgin thing, which he may or may not be looking for, but he knows that he knows he will get headlines.
Well, I have news for all those would-be terrorists out there. You know, the 70 virgins have already been defiled, so forget about it.
Somebody actually did another literal translation, and they said it was actually 70 raisins. It wasn't, you know, raisins were supposed to be, you know, sacred fruit.
And, right, right.
It wasn't virgins. Hey, Jules.
Hello. And actually,
Hello, Jules.
Hi there, guys. Actually, in the France attack, they've in talking to the neighbors, the gentleman was apparently not at all. They're saying that he was not at all a practicing religious gentleman at all. And,
No, he liked girls. He liked girls and salsa.
And salsa. Girls and salsa. That's what he was interested in. And, he had no religious prospects or anything. So it doesn't look like we're looking at anything of that. And the newspapers and stuff, according to The Guardian and also the French papers, they're saying that they're not showing any kind of connections with him and any kind of... radicalization or anything. So I think that's important that at least the independent media sources are pushing, because, you know, the right-wingers are going to be pushing the other stuff, the bad stuff, and we don't want to hear that. So.
Yep. The white wing, it's nothing we can't solve with a few Tomahawk cruise missiles, even though the Tomahawk cruise missiles have never seemed to solve anything. But as Marty wrote just a few minutes ago, he said, I find myself asking the question, why France? What are they not doing that someone appears to be attempting to get them to do something? Or am I being a conspiracy theorist? I think it's kind of backwards. And this is one of those let's step out of our America bubble moments, because as Gerald pointed out last hour, you know, we can be influenced by right-wing media tropes as well. You know, Gerald said, you know, he looked at what happened in France and said, oh, must be is. And so did I, and so did a lot of people. But it ain't necessarily. On the other hand, the other media trope that has worked very well on us is the right wing idea of France as a bunch of cheese eating surrender monkey sissies. Okay, let's burst that bubble. There is nothing of the sort that can be applied to the French. The French are brutal. The French are as merciless as they come when they choose to be. And they'll kill you. You know, it was the French and the British who got Hillary all in a dither to make sure that we got our bombing on in Libya. Okay, well, we can't just let our European allies do this by themselves. It wouldn't be cricket now, would it? We've got to show solidarity. I mean, it'll make us look like cheese eating surrender monkeys. Well, it's not what the French haven't done, it's what the French have done. And just because they didn't participate in our stupid little war in Iraq doesn't mean that they have not caused their own fair share of heartache and agony in the Muslim world. Can I get any amens on that? Or am I just completely out? Out in left field?
You're right. The French had a lot of colonies in the Middle East, and they were not very friendly with those colonies. They were rather brutal with those colonies. I was talking with one of your listeners who is in Holland right now, and he over the week.
Oh, Jeffrey.
Yes, Jeffrey. I'm from Suriname, and we were discussing this, and the French were real bastards, apparently, to the colonies in the Middle East, and folks around there just aren't very, very pleased with them now. So that has some to do with why they've had some attacks, but this one I do want to reiterate is apparently not one of them, but in the past, that's why some folks have not been very pleasant with them, so... most likely.
Also, I was at a French airport, Charles de Gaulle Airport, in February of 2005, and they had a family of five on the floor, including toddlers, all spread eagles, and they had a machine gun at each of their backs. And I didn't slow down or anything. I just kept walking on down through the airport tunnel. I don't know if that was standard policy or whatever. I didn't want them mad at me.
Hi, I'm back. I don't know what happened. My Skype stream suddenly beeped at me three times and went away.
I muted you. It sounded like you were doing something.
Oh, okay. Hey, Spark. Anyway, I traveled when I was in Spain. This is back in the 90s. I was doing the expo there, and we worked 24-hour shifts. Basically, you will go in and you work until you fall over, and then you go home and sleep for a couple hours. And I was walking home one night about 3 in the morning and met this security squad in blue suits. They're kind of blue jumpsuits. They are all scruffy, unshaved, and they're all carrying very recently used AK-47s or whatever. I'm not that up on those. And they did not speak any English, and my Spanish was very non-fluent. And this is 3 o'clock in the morning, and I've got three of them standing there with guns in my face. They were not pleasant people. And this has been going on that long. When I was in Japan, they stopped us on the way to Narita, a mile from the airport, and searched the bus. Guys with automatic weapons coming through and checking your passport, your ticket, and checking all the overhead luggage. They went through all of the luggage in the compartment under the bus. And you know, everybody stand outside, and they lined us all up and checked our luggage and our tags and our flights. And this was back in the 90s. This is not anything new going on. This has been going on for a while. It's just getting new to us.
We also have to remember the French aren't polite to ISIS like we are. They call them Daesh.
Yeah.
And they're very open about it. And I think, you know, that not showing the respect does kind of focus their ire. And if, you know, I don't know if it created or not, but it does make them kind of stand out. And they're much easier target quicker than we are.
Well, I mean, what do you suppose, what impact would it, I mean, let's try to jump into somebody else's shoes for a minute here. What impact do you suppose it would have on an American citizen if, say, a bunch of people from a foreign country hijacked planes and flew them into buildings and killed 3,000 people? How kindly disposed would we be toward the country from which, say, 19 people came from?
You mean if we got the right one?
apparently, we give them, you know, more weapons and give them special treaty status.
Yeah, but that's the American government. The American people, though, not so much. And I'm not talking about anybody's government. I'm talking about what happens if you go to bed one night. You and your spouse in one room, and you know, you got a couple of little girls, they've got a bedroom, you got a couple of little boys, they've got a bedroom, and you know, somewhere just long about sunrise, everything goes boom, and the next thing you know, you're stumbling around in a haze carrying pieces of your children because you know, the French just bombed you.
Yeah, but Bob.
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
I've got a question about, or an answer about the original question, which I presume had to do with Saudi Arabia and our response to an act by people associated with either their government or their nation, meaning 9/11. The part of the the grasping for the answer would be, it would depend on how much oil that nation has. And that wouldn't matter whether it's our government or the people, because we're all petroleum junkies in this country.
Well, yes. And you know, as Barclay just said in the chat room, that would tend to piss anyone off, Bob. Yes, it would. And you know what? If you survive long enough, and let's say one of your children survived, maybe when they grew up and they had children of their own, you'd dandle your little grandchildren on your knee, and you would say, never forget the people in that country who murdered the auntie and the uncle you never got to meet. Now, take that and multiply it a million times over. And tell me
it's about radical Islam.
it's about radical something. It's about pissed off.
Yeah, it's
people.
Radical murder victim.
Well, yeah, it's about pissed off people, and justifiably so, with a big dollop of the element of religious fervor thrown into it. You got a Duke's mixture of madness.
Yeah, but Scott, the guy with the truck last night in France was not religious. He wasn't interested in going to prayers. He was interested in going to bars.
Oh, I know. And wasn't there another case recently of some sort of mass murder in this country, I believe, but it might have been elsewhere. You can't keep track of them anymore.
No. That was Orlando, where the guy says, I'm pledging allegiance to ISIS right here, right now. When it turns out that he was closeted gay and had hooked up with people who went to that very nightclub and was working out his hatreds nothing to do with Islam.
But there was another instance not too long ago that had to do with a disgruntled person, not for any religious reason, but he had problems with his wife or his ex-wife. And like I say, there have been so goddamn many of these incidents, I can't keep track of the circumstances of them anymore. I wish I could, because, yeah, it was a case similar to this guy, apparently in Nice, France, that it was an issue over a domestic problem as opposed to, you know, radical anything.
Right. But on the other hand, what I'm getting at is that we're, as I said, we've got a country full of people. Well, you know, when all of your problems look like nails, all your solutions will look like hammers. And we are determined to see all these things as the problem is we're just not bombing them enough. And if you go to the Pentagon, you say, well, generals, admirals, what do you think we need to do? Bomb them. Anything else? Bomb them some more. Sir, we're the military. It's all we know how to do is kill people and blow things up. And so we insist on looking for military solutions to social problems. And this is sociocultural, isn't it?
Well, when you've got the biggest hammer in the world, everything looks like a nail.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning. I don't think that's quite what that song means, but I think that's what they think it means.
Well, you know, there's no money or profit to be had in hammering, you know, ringing out danger and hammering out love, love between my brothers and my sisters. Good God, you know, that is not a good phraseology for an IPO stock offering, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I forgot to up my shares in Coke Industries.
Well, the motivating factor in this country and in this government has long been, if there's no money to be made from it, then we're not interested. And that's the biggest hammer of all, the financial interest that these people have in perpetuating this system as it currently is.
Well, I've got something I would like to add to this conversation, if it's okay at this time.
Go, Steve, go. You don't have to ask permission.
No. And I've been drilling back, and all these mass murders and schoolyard shootings, and I know Bob can probably concur with me on this. Bob, when we went to school, it was not uncommon to see shotguns in the back of a truck's parking lot, and we didn't have none of these mass shootings, did we?
Well, no. I saw plenty of shotguns, rifles, what have you, in the back of pickup
exactly.
trucks.
Your easy rider rifle rack.
And I've been asking myself, what has changed? Okay, what the hell has changed? And the only thing I can drill down on is psychotropic drugs. All these drugs that tinker around with your serotonin levels and all that. And I really think that the pharmaceuticals are culpable in this latest outbreak. And I don't think it's when folks are on these medications, they're fine. It's when they quit taking them, and then they just go ballistic. And I think the pharmaceuticals are really culpable in this latest outbreak. And that's what I wanted to throw out there. And I'd like to hear feedback from everybody.
I think you'll, Steve, I think you'll probably get some amens. And I'm not willing to say that that's entirely not right or not true. We are a heavily medicated people, but I think that's largely applicable to the problems we have in the United States. I don't think you can say that about somebody, say, you know, stumbling out of the rubble of a house somewhere near
right.
Tripoli.
And I meant that as purely as domestic example. I didn't mean that as a worldwide example. But, you know, again, I was trying to drill down on what has changed. Why do
we have all these schoolyard shootings,
you know?
And I think that's a great question to ask. Now, I remember, you know, even back, you know, as a kid, and we're talking about Alabama in my case, yeah, there'd be people with rifles on their gun racks in their pick-em-up trucks, back before pickup trucks had back seats even.
And
a lot of us kind of looked askance at that. Is it really? You know, hunting season, not so much. But that was never the way that any of the serious gun people that I knew talked about, you know, safely handling firearms. And maybe mine is the far more paranoid response, Steve.
The
National Rifle Association decided to become the armed militant wing of the Republican Party, and when they did that, they ramped up the rhetoric and started singing the praises of firearms, and that plays into the mindset of a certain plurality, if not majority, of American citizens. And it turned out to be good for business, for the firearms business, because that's who the National Rifle Association represents in the long run. But at the same time, the National Rifle Association doesn't give a good goddamn about any part of the Constitution except the Second Amendment. So I see the National Rifle Association as having engaged in a concerted attempt to erode society, to erode civil government, to erode the Constitution itself, because a country that is in chaos is a country that buys guns, and a country that buys guns is good for the gun manufacturers, and that's good for the NRA, and hey, look, capitalism.
And every time we have one of these situations where somebody goes ballistic, the stock, I mean, if you check the market, the stock in Remington and all these manufacturers, they all skyrocket. So there is a dollar incentive in here, as sick as that may sound.
Well, to respond to the question about SSRIs, I can speak with some personal experience on this, if you'd like me to.
Please do, and I'm going to toss it back to you and mute out of here. Thank you.
Okay, well, about 20 years ago, a series of doctors put me on a series of things like Prozac and Zoloft and some other similar medicines regarding what they thought were depression issues. And I can speak from experience that those things are some nasty, nasty medicines. But I don't think the answer, even domestically, in our change of attitude is so much about a lot of people being either on or off SSRIs. I think it has a lot more to do with the change in the nature of news delivering and discourse in this country, a lot of which, strangely enough, is sponsored by companies that make these nasty medicines. Okay, when you change the level of dialogue, it can't help but have an effect on the attitudes and even behaviors of the people who expose themselves to this strange and angry version of life that we see in a lot of these radio and TV outlets. But I remember when the first week that they had me on this Prozac, I was out in the backyard doing yard work and began throwing lawn furniture and screaming at no one in particular. And that was the tug on my sleeve to say, let's go back to the doctor and rethink this approach, because that's no way to be in the world.
Scott, I had the problem with some of the antihistamines. I have allergies, and over the counter antihistamines would make me it's weird. There were some that were fine, made me kind of sleepy and fine, but there were some that turned me into a raging tyrant. I would throw things and be very angry and had, like, you know, ants crawling under my skin, kind of, you know, irritation. That's over the counter antihistamines. I since have stopped. I don't take any anymore. I just sneeze. because my allergies aren't that bad. My eyes water, my nose runs, and I sneeze, and I just deal with it. But I can't tell what it's going to do. I don't know which ones and which interaction between them. I don't know. So I stopped, and just now I just deal with a runny nose and itchy eyes and that's it. But I've seen, and my ex-wife, the doctor put her on an allergy, you know, an antihistamine, super antihistamine. And all of a sudden she was yelling at my kids. She was yelling at the kids. We were still married then. Yelling at the kids, kicking the dog. She was really, really angry. All the time. It didn't matter what anything happened. And finally, one day I sat down and I said, listen, would you go back to the doctor? Stop. Don't take these. I said, you're doing exactly the same thing that happened to me. I see the exact same attitude here. I said, go ask them.
Do
you know why, though?
Go
ahead, Snark. I was just going to say, do you know why, though? The point was made in the chat that some of this, the diphenhydramine can cause psycho behavior. Go ahead, Snark. Explain why.
Well, I was going along another route, but the human body itself is the main drugstore you ever go to. If any of the organs get out of balance, you can also be producing drugs that will mimic the taking your psychoactive drugs. So, that even though if it's not from a drugstore, it still could be from your body and it could be a psychotropic drug. I was thinking of it from a different point of view, though. To me, it's more as a sensitivity envelope drift, where and here's an example of a sensitivity envelope drift. Back in the mid-50s, they would have thought the song Love Me Tender by Elvis Presley was a comfortable tempo for them to listening to music at. As we go out through the years, even if you go back 20 years ago, let's say to Depeche Mode, you're talking at a much higher beat rate per song. And as you move on into now with people listening to rap and dubstep, the beats are 100 times faster than what they experienced in it. The sensitivity, if you'd played the current music like a dubstep or to someone in the 1950s, it would be absolute noise to them. But experiencing the drift, we don't realize, you know, we don't see the difference as much as somebody from the 50s would. Now, as you shift for guns, you know, they might have had a shooting every year. And then by the 90s, we had a shooting every month. So now we're talking about by the hour or minute. That's a sensitivity drift to me.
Now it's a shooting every day.
Well, it's more than just every day, yeah. An example of what Snork is saying, I think everyone has probably seen Back to the Future, and where the scene where he is on the Michael J. Fox character is on the stage, and he's playing the guitar, to the nice smooth beat with everything, and he starts getting faster and faster, and he's getting more into the rock, and he's starting getting heavier and heavier into the rock, and the audience just stops, and they're like, "What the fuck is this?" You know, and that's kind of what Snork is kind of getting at, you know. They're used to this, you know, this real mellow sound, and you know, the Fox character goes into this real radical sound, and they're like, "What is this?" They just they're just baffled.
And that's great,
what he's getting at.
The great line that he utters after he stops playing the loud '90s, '80s type music is, "Well, it's too early for you," speaking to the kids in the auditorium, "but your kids are going to love it." And that made me think of, I think it was the documentary Why We Fight from the early 2000s. I believe, if that's the one that's correct, there was a segment in there about the fighting, the U.S. military in Iraq. You got to go back about 12 years to early 2000s in Iraq. A lot of these soldiers, with their military gear on and their incredibly powerful weapons, have got headphones on, listening to the most head-banging rock and roll music. It's like the soundtrack of war, to kind of spur them on to do their fighting and their killing. And you got to wonder, how likely would they be if you took away the element of that music?
I mean, come on, Scott. What do you want them listening to? "Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely daughter."
Well, somewhere between Madhavani and something a little heavier. But no, what I'm saying is Snork raises a good point about the effect of music then versus now on the general populace.
A little Wagner will you know, spur people right on.
Yeah, I love the smell of napalm in the morning, you know?
Okay, so speaking of drugs, I got a note here.
Uh-oh.
From Jay Cruzen. I presume, since he sent it to me, that it's okay to share. He says, "Remember that really, really dark poetry I used to write? Paxil. Not that I'm not dark anymore, but yeah, those drugs can warp people. Did me, anyway." I don't like them. Maybe they work for some people. I don't know. I think we're all probably diagnosable at some point in our lives. I've never been on them.
Most pharmaceuticals also, at this time even, are still imbalanced. For instance, for diabetics, when they give them insulin, there's two factors in insulin that the human body needs. They're only able to store one. The clotting factor has to be taken out. So the beta factor is gone. And that's going to be the same with almost every pharmaceutical you have. As you tune it to one, you're excluding the pairing that molecule needs to work proper in its place. The workings of these hormones psychopharmaceuticals, as you're thinking of, they work just like the video game Tetris. As they fall into place, and they make a whole row, they basically activate. And if you don't have the proper sequence assembled at the correct time and place, a wrong sequence may be produced from or expressed from that genetic transfer that actually makes the chemicals that are the secondary response to the chemical that you add or the pharmaceutical that you take.
Well, that brings me to the question of receptors that are built into our brains. In the case of THC-like compounds, we're naturally wired with the receptors in our brains for those things to receive the THC-like compounds that our bodies produce on their own, but are also available through marijuana, through cannabis.
Right. And now Jules might be able to help more there.
My big question now becomes, in several months' time, we're looking at a candidate. We're looking at two candidates, neither of which has ever smoked marijuana. Okay. And one is vehemently against it, and the other presumably doesn't like it either. One wonders what the election of either of these people is going to mean in the so-called failed war on drugs.
I personally don't believe their statements.
I would not believe either of their statements.
And some of these drugs are like the THCR and the THCL. Is that correct, Jules?
Yeah.
That the human body can react with the THCR, but the THCL will act as a poison and may not be metabolizable.
And we really need to be able to study these we really need to study a marijuana more. Really, what we're getting right now is anecdotal, and it's very well versed anecdotally. I'm not saying that THC and CBDs are not useful. Especially CBDs, as far as CBDs are the chemical that are traditionally is the chemical that is actually the most useful for like pain patients and for the medicinal effects, so to speak, in that is in marijuana. THC is more of the chemical that causes more of the high, but make it easier to understand. I'm not talking, I mean, that's very, very, very simple.
Well, let's go from the theoretical. Let's go from the theoretical to the actual.
Okay.
There has been an autopsy on Omar Mateen.
Okay.
The shooter at Pulse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the one hand, even though lots of people who were A, gay, and B, went to Pulse, and C, were aware of Omar Mateen's actions, said, dude was so closeted it was pathetic, homicidally pathetic. According to this report, the FBI, however, has been unable to find evidence to corroborate such claims. Agents have failed to find any photographs, text messages, smartphone apps, gay pornography, or cell tower location data that suggests that Mateen, who was twice married to women and had a young son, had a secret gay life, law enforcement officials have said. So, you know, never mind the actual witnesses, the FBI can't find any electronic data because, of course, that's ever so much more probative of the question. So, dumbass FBI. Because they're all running around looking for the machine that goes ping. On the other hand, however,
well, we need pinging machines.
On the other hand, however, The autopsy results indicated that, no, he was not HIV positive, because one of the things that came out in one of the interviews was that he had had a sexual encounter with somebody who afterwards said, oh, yeah, I'm HIV positive, which may have made him a little bit, you know, furious, psychotic,
nuts.
Crazy, nuts, violent. But that doesn't mean that you know, then this gets into the weeds of legal stuff. You know, the guy saying I'm HIV positive was not offering it for the truth of the matter asserted, but rather to make the really icky guy go away. But So while they did not find him to be HIV positive, they did find something else. They found, the medical examiners, they found evidence of massive, long-term steroid use.
How interesting. That would not cause anyone to be full of rage or cause them to be unpredictable in their manner.
And what were we talking about in regard to police in the last week or so? The fact that that there may very well be a steroid, you know, a problem inside law enforcement. If you've ever seen the way that they're all bulked up and stretching at their shirt sleeves, and yeah.
And at one point, Mateen wanted to be a cop, didn't he?
Yes, I believe he did.
Yeah, he was. He actually was a you know.
He was in training.
He was a security guard, and had been through training, but had been rejected by the police forces, but had gotten into a private institution.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
And by the way, in terms of a counter opinion, with all the talk about SSRIs, a note coming from Steve in New York. I have to write in about this. I have stood at the window looking down, ready to jump. I also remember lying in bed and having to force myself to not run to the window and jump out, with the compulsion almost painful. This is not the worst of it. For me, these drugs have literally saved my life.
Amen.
See, I'm not familiar with SSRIs, so the only thing, when steroids come up, I just remember Lyle Alzado. I go back to those NFL days, and that was actually lauded as a good thing back in the bad old days of the 60s and 70s.
Well, and just to clarify in regard to my comments earlier about SSRIs, I'm not dismissing them, across the board. But what has happened is they're as prevalent and as mindlessly prescribed in today's American world as Flintstone vitamins. And they're viewed as relatively harmless and universally beneficial when they're not. That's all I was getting across.
No, I understand, but I just every coin has two sides. Let's go over to the stress line and check in Florida. Hey, welcome to the program. Welcome to the group.
Hey, Bob, can you hear me very well? It's Mark.
Yeah, I got you, Mark. I got you.
All right, I appreciate it. I think possibly I'm being heard clearer than I'm able to hear you guys, but I just wanted to comment that my last year and a half in the Marine Corps, I spent some time with Marine Corps Counterintelligence and a Naval Investigative Service agent, a federal civilian, had done a research paper working on his, I don't know if he's working on his master's or PhD, but in regards to steroids, and one of the allegations that he's making in his paper, which, I mean, our common sense would tell us this, was that when you are sent to combat and you happen to be an active duty Marine, predominantly, even though he was looking at both branches, a soldier period, and you're under the infliction of doing steroids, which are illegal in the armed forces, that you would incur steroid withdrawal. And obviously, we've had a lot of crimes that are committed by the influence of steroids and their personalities, from pro baseball players and anything our minds can imagine. So I think it's a legitimate concern, and I think police and firemen, though firemen just traditionally, in my human experience, seem to be a more peaceful creature. Police have a propensity for being naturally desirable for aggression, and once they get into the system and they see who everybody covers them, that they that it becomes exacerbated by that. Matter of fact, most of the guys I work with in Miami Bob, that I met in the very beginning, and over time they were almost unrecognizable. Their bodies blew up so large, and being a big kid from the Midwest, eating a lot of corn, I mean, I was just a big, strong ex-Marine, but I wouldn't have touched just about anything like that. But I started recognizing all of my partners were just almost unrecognizable because of their size and actual strength. They have the burst of power strength. But then they also ended up, coincidentally, not to drag the conversation that direction, but those were the Miami Riverboat murderers. And so their aggression and their desire for greed led to 80 of them being arrested by the FBI, 20 or 25 in the very beginning for murdering people for tons of cocaine. Anyway, as they did, you know. So, I mean, it is a legitimate concern, and I think it would be my opinion that it would be a contributing factor. I just wanted to chime in on that.
And I appreciate it very much, Mark, because you offer a degree of authenticity that perhaps we can't have.
Well, you know, listening earlier to the call, people going through airports in 2005, or people doing things in the 1990s. Some of those experiences are as contemporary as any of us can be, as our lives are going in different directions and in different circumstances. So, I mean, we all have things to contribute. So, I appreciate, like I always listen to the show when I can, because I'm always learning from good people that I think have peace in their heart. And so in any case, that's that I appreciate the credibility comment or experience, because I think that's one reason I got out. It didn't really take me long, but I had values that I wasn't going to screech change in me as a young American, as a good Marine. And I wasn't going to let the streets change me. I wasn't going to let my partners change me. And it's actually the reason I left the city of Miami Police, because I had a policeman. He was overtly racist. And he went to drive and arrest one evening in Liberty City. And the subject got out of hand, literally. And I intentionally stayed in the squad car as I watched him struggle with a defendant who was stronger than him. And the gun didn't mean shit to me. I was all about using my hands because of my size and strength and physical capabilities, but I didn't have rage. I didn't have any desire to hurt anybody. I went out there as a civil servant. So as he struggled, I intentionally made sure that he saw me reading the Miami Herald. It happened to be Sunday night. I was reading the cartoon section, matter of fact, I think I recall. But in any case, I folded the paper very slowly, went out, helped get control of the subject, but it led to a verbal altercation with that policeman. And he, as Brains would say, he dined me out. So the sergeant showed up, who was one of his friends, and they took my badge and my gun from me, literally on the street, because I threatened, like I would do in the Marine Corps, when something was inappropriate, I would threaten to kick your ass and either do it or do it with pen and paper. So in any case, I took my case. My case was declined by the Attorney General's office because there's nothing there. And the defendant that was arrested by my partner was asked in front of a lobby full of people in downtown Miami as to whether he wanted to press charges against me because I had to get strong with him in the arrest. And he said no. And I my heart about dropped out of my chest. And he looked over at the guy I was working with. He goes, "I'm going to press charges against him." So it wasn't then I knew I had a case, but the point I'm trying to make was I fought racism as if my life depended on it. And then what was ironic is the guy that I got in the disagreement with, his brother was a sheriff from Broward County, which had a squared away reputation. City of Miami had a good reputation up until a certain point. And I just thought the listeners might appreciate hearing that unfortunately, the two of them ganged up on a streetwalker in Broward County and beat her up and held her against her will and raped and robbed her. So they both went to prison. So these are the kind of people that I was working with. And then, so when you run into people for the last 20 years, 25 years, I've not really told people what my whole background is. And then when they find out, especially union guys don't like cops, and nor did I necessarily, but You know, so when they find out you're a cop, they go, well, why'd you leave? And I go, well, why would you stay? You know, why would you put up with that? So for me to take in all these experiences right now with the way the whole country is trended with law enforcement and your earlier observations, Bob, concerning the training, I witnessed that even at the academy, and I would even throw in, it would be no surprise or shock to yourself, but it's also laziness when they take these films and they have one instructor instead of having, you know, 10 instructors or 6 instructors and paying people to work with them for longer periods of time. So greed also drives the ignorance because you kind of program them mentally, especially if they've been in the military. And I happen to be lucky to have been raised by a Marine, so I was mentally able to push a lot of that stuff out of my brain as they tried in there. But you know, even in the 70s, they were saying, you know, as you did your long runs where they do the brainwashing, amongst other techniques, but the Ho Chi Minh was the son of a bitch. Well, shit, I was in there in the mid-70s. I was like, well, the fucking war has been over for a year or two, so Ho Chi Minh's really not a son of a bitch to me. Besides, in my mind, having been an athlete, I was like, that motherfucker won the war. So, I mean, is he a son of a bitch? You know, he won. You're the son of a bitch. You went there. So there's a lot of things of it. I took my values. I have fought, like probably all of us, to push back against them, and I've tested them literally with my life. So I'm glad to see Black Lives Matter and their significance, even though it scares a lot of white people with their young black people speaking out. But I'm glad to see that, unfortunately, the wheels have come off, but they're also being challenged simultaneously. And I just wanted to say, and I'll get out of your hair, but I think President Obama is a very cool customer, and we should all be thankful he is, especially with the subjects we're dealing with tonight, because this involves Russia and Iran. So you need a cool cowboy. You don't need a Rambo in there, which obviously we all know that. So I'll hang up and listen to you guys, and I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Thanks a bunch. You have a great weekend.
Okay, brother.
Bye now. Our buddy Mark from Florida. Well, like I said, Mark offers a degree of authenticity many of us can't approach.
I missed a whole lot, Bob.
I'm sorry.
Mark sounds like he really has it together.
Well, he knows of which he speaks. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Some stuff developing in you know, I don't necessarily like to get too well. I mean, it's a breaking story. And information is sketchy and weird. And what is that? Truth is the first casualty of war. The business in Turkey is becoming scary, and it must be absolutely terrifying for people who live there. Before I head down this road, thanks go out to Steve and Ms. Carrot and Cletus. We have $160 to go now in fundraising for the evening. $160 to go. And hopefully we'll do that in the next 51 minutes or so. But one at 160, two at 80, et cetera, et cetera. By the way, a note coming from a member of the fraternity of Steve. Subject line, Toke the Dope. Here's the recommendation for smoking the weed. It is arguably the oldest and most revered herb in Chinese traditional medicine. Ta Ma, I believe, is the usual pinyin spelling, the male plant that grows by the door of the house. But something like 3 generations of Maoist communism has effectively erased its history from 6,000 years of culture. Why is that, do you suppose? Oh, maybe because it's not particularly good for authoritarianism. It just me, but that comes immediately to mind. No, in Turkey, claims are being made that somebody has begun censorship activities. Twitter was reportedly blocked at one point, Facebook. The same was said of Google. However,
Bob?
Yeah.
I've been watching Twitter, #Istanbul, ever since the show started, and there's never been a disruption.
No, but it's people in Turkey trying to use it.
Well, I'm getting pictures from people in Turkey.
Yeah.
I've seen two cars run over by tanks tonight.
Let's see. What's the name of this group? DIN, D-Y-N. They track internet global performance.
Mm-hmm.
They reported Facebook and Twitter were blocked in Turkey for about an hour. DIN's director of internet analysis, Doug Mattery, told CNN Money, "We saw the throttling of connections from Turkey to Twitter and Facebook just after reports of the coup in Turkey." Google said they're aware that, of reports that YouTube is down in Turkey. However, systems seem to be functioning normally.
Just got a report from a fairly reliable source saying the state-run TRT is back on the air after military took it down in Turkey. This is from about 2 minutes ago.
Yeah, and among other things, a military jet is said to have missiled a commandeered helicopter out of the air. President Erdogan had to use FaceTime to do an interview with Turkish CNN. What else? And the parliament building's being bombed.
Well, there was helicopters firing on it earlier.
I just got that from Clarence.
There was a lot of video on Twitter.
Yeah, Ankara Parliament, bomb dropped, thrown, not entirely clear. Clarence says, Turkey's a NATO member. World War III or a national coup? Who knows?
Hey, Bob. They're using our nukes.
Hey, Bob, I got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What position does T. Rump have on the Turkish military coup?
It's a great coup. It's a beautiful coup. It's a tremendous coup.
Do you need to ask?
I mean, who knows?
I'm sure after last night, he's not wanting to make a statement on anything after that screw up about whether he could cancel the vice president or not.
Oh, no, that never happened. He didn't do that.
I cannot tell you the verbiage used in his statement on Turkey, but I can give you the nature of it, and that would be, once again, ill-informed.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, courtesy of our buddy Joy, a new reference for Mike Pence in discussing the new full ticket. Joy said, over on Facebook, "I fear this theocratic, ignorant, hate-filled, cloth-eared Neanderthal fuck." So, when you hear the name Mike Pence, henceforward, that's theocratic, ignorant, hate-filled, cloth-eared Neanderthal fuck. And she said, "I fear him more than Trump and Clinton combined." And may I remind you that, at least my private theory, my personal... no, it's not private. I've made it public. If Trump wins the presidency, his vice president will have the best chance of becoming president of any vice president in recent memory, including George H.W. Bush back when Ray Gunn got shot.
Well, in the grand tradition of vice presidents hailing from Indiana, first and foremost, somebody needs to ask him if he can spell potato.
Okay, now. It's Pence the Putz is what it is. It's Pence the Putz. We'll just simplify it for you.
I really like theocratic, ignorant, hate-filled, cloth-eared Neanderthal fuck myself.
Well, yeah, I like that too. It's just
it's a bit of a mouthful, but man, it captures the whole je ne sais derp of Mike Pence.
Yeah, and it's a lot shorter than my description earlier, so...
Well, two observations. One, immediately, his politics notwithstanding, his eyes are too close together, okay? That's the first thing that struck me. The other thing is Trump-Pence is the direct inverse of Nixon-Agnew. but at least Agnew had the distinction of having been a county supervisor or county commissioner in the Baltimore outskirts and was actually governor of Maryland. Here in the case of Trump, he's never served anything or anyone but himself.
I wonder if anybody's gotten to work yet on whether or not Trump-Pence works out to any sort of nasty anagram. If the universe is operating according to its normal laws,
Let me fire up the anagram generator. I meant to do that earlier. Hold on. I'll tell you what I find. So go ahead.
The goddess of irony is always with us, as you know, right, Bob?
She never sleeps.
I mean, I was thinking the name Pence. I mean, that's a unit of money. So I was thinking like Pennywise, Pence Foolish, or something like that. I don't really know that. I don't know if that really works, but just to describe this guy's conservative, how he's such a tightwad and doesn't want to spend money on, you know, anyone else.
No. I mean, I don't want to put too fine a point on it. This guy's a dick. Okay,
major fucking dick.
He signed a law saying that a woman who has an abortion in Indiana has to pay for a funeral for the little wad of tissue.
Really?
Yes.
Jeez.
He did.
Here you go. According to the anagram generator for Trump Pence, you have percent ump. That would be like percent umpire. Presumably the 1%. You've got recent pump, meaning what they're doing to us from behind. You've got what else? Let's see. Good God.
Roger Assay, the one that does the remembered drug, is awesome. Anagrams.
Hmm. Jules, are you Indianans going to be sad to lose Pence if he should become vice president?
I'm not a Hoosier by nature, and I'm not sure because I don't know who's coming up, who will be taking his place. Right now, he's upside down in the polls, and he's upside down in his numbers, and he's actually only like 4 to 6 points ahead of the Democratic challenger. So there's we're how far away we are from the elections in November. So there's actually a chance that he could lose. We could actually have a Democratic governor. He's a blue dog Democrat, but he's a Democratic governor. So we're making progress.
Well, slow, you'll take progress wherever you can find it, even if just a blue dog, a blue dog substituting for Republican. At least you don't have to watch your wallet quite as much with a blue dog, you know.
Well, I saw one wag noting earlier today that the new logo, the TP logo, would be unwelcome in some pizzerias in Indiana.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a trumpets, is what it is. It's a trumpets instead of a tumpence. It's a trumpets.
There you go, a trumpets.
Well, harking
instead of
harking
a penance.
Harking back to the classic Charmin commercials featuring Mr. Whipple, the storekeeper, TP, they'll squeeze you.
Do I hear a bell, Bob? That was a good one.
Hold on. Okay. It's always an easy reach.
There are a couple here from the anagram generator when you put in Trump Pence, there's like three or four of them with the C word in it, so I won't use it, but
that C is a word, possibility.
C word C word prep me. Anyway.
Wait, okay, so yeah, rhymes with runt prep me, right?
Yeah, yeah. Here, just let me send you the link, Bob. And
no, that's okay. I think we've got a winner.
Okay, can't have too much fun in one night. I'm seeing a news flash from Gray in the chat here saying Clinton just selected Joe Manchin as her hardcore progressive rambling mate.
No. That's a joke.
No.
That's a joke.
Or is that just being funny?
That's Little Gray being funny.
That cannot be.
I don't know his humor yet, so because I didn't see anything else coming up, but he just, you know, had he just popped it in as a new flash.
Yeah, he's confessing now. Don't say that. I made it up.
Yeah, thank you. I see.
Yeah, because see, I mean, if you follow Manchin like I do, you know that you're not going to get to be vice president when your own brother has sued you for stiffing him on $2 million.
Sorry, Gray. I'm reading. I've got, you know, three tweets open, and that popped up, and I said, all right. I'll be quiet now.
No, you don't have to be quiet.
I kind of like Center Pump. That's an anagram for Trump Pence. Center Pump.
But given Pence's predilection for wanting to know what was happening inside women's bodies, the rude word "prep me" may fit better than anything else, because I'm sure he thinks of that part of a woman's body in exactly those terms.
Yes, let's not forget periods for Pence. And the fact that we women of Indiana did successfully shut down the state house phones multiple days along multiple weeks. So.
Thank you, Jules.
Yes. We were quite successful in our attempts to drive the state house nuts and actually got the Corey something. I can't think of his last name. I think it was Corey. But the gentleman from Fort Wayne who introduced the bill in the first place, to the abortion bill that started this all, to drop all of his social media because he was so sick of us. So women can be very, very ruthless when we want to be. And we have a mission.
Well, assuming that Ruth is not part of the mission, you're definitely ruthless.
Exactly. Well, even if she is, I mean, it depends on which way you swing, I suppose.
Earlier, somebody mentioned the news item that was going around about Trump apparently panicked and did a midnight call last night going into today, calling his advisors to see if he could retract his pick of Mike Pence as his VP. And has that been verified?
It was all over the news today. CNN had it on.
That was just, I think, because they were looking for something to latch on to.
Well, in 08, the big question was, is Barack Obama ready for the 3 o'clock, 3 a.m. phone call? You know, my question here in 2016 is America ready for Trump's midnight calls or midnight tweets? Which, and the fact that he lives on like 3 or 4 hours sleep a night, what is the extent of damage done to his psyche and his thinking, if any? From sleep deprivation over years and years and years. The guy is just a walking compendium of potential problems, you know?
Yeah, Jules, he really is.
Oh, hey we're going to be kind of bouncing around for a couple of minutes. I'm looking at the Istanbul timeline on Twitter. This is certainly encouraging. A mosque in Istanbul has reportedly declared, "It is time to show real Islam. This is jihad. Take the streets for Allah." Let's remember that Recep Erdogan is a pretty hardcore, you know. The word used in media is Islamist.
Is that verified? Because that's
that. Airport. The airport has been reported and apparently verified. All flights have been canceled in and out of Istanbul.
Erdogan supposedly just landed there on an executive jet. Is owned by the Turkish government.
Let's see. People being told don't leave the hotels.
I just pulled up a AJE feed here that's doing a live broadcast. Breaking news after coup attempt. Government says it fully controls the capital. Is the crawl?
Well, there was pictures.
Who's got background audio going?
I do. And I can mute it. Sorry.
Apparently President Erdogan has landed in Istanbul. Let's see. Militaries opened fire on crowds in Istanbul. Oh, geez. This is helpful.
There's been pictures of the police force has been arresting soldiers.
What? Really?
Really. I saw it earlier. They had a whole big old huge room with cops and a bunch of soldiers sitting in chairs, you know, de-armed, sitting there looking dumb.
The soldiers gave up their weapons to the police? That's amazing.
Well, real live pictures, and they caught one of the guys that was supposedly heading one of the group. It just showed a picture of him a while ago. It was heading up some of the military there. They arrested him.
So
It's fluid.
Yeah. Do we have any idea of the faction of the military that was behind this? Because I know that Erdogan has gotten a reputation for being somewhat of a strong man, I guess a strong man who basically changed the constitution so he could be president for a longer period of time, or prime minister, whatever it is, and also, he wants to basically make, Turkey a less secular country. At least that's the sense that, you know, that's kind of the gist of a lot of the articles I've read about this situation.
Maintains power through a connection to the Islamic community. There has been a rise in Islamic fundamentalism in Turkey on his watch. I remember the story from a couple of weeks ago where religious maniacs broke into a record listening party where people were listening to the new Radiohead album, and apparently that offended their idea of Allah, and they went in and tried to bust heads, and they broke some furniture and it beat some people up. Women who are dressed as in Western style, or are not sufficiently covered up, have been accosted in Turkey in recent years as being, you know, slutty women who are, an offense unto the eyes of Allah. Of course, the other side of that is that the angry Indian pointed out to me earlier this evening that it was his understanding that the people running the coup in the military were and I don't know how one can be, but a Zionist or pro-Zionist faction of the Turkish military. Mm-hmm. So, it's kind of hard. On the other hand, the United States has said, you know, we support the Turkish government. Which is kind of interesting when you juxtapose that against how we responded to a certain little coup back in 2009 in a little place called Honduras.
Hmm. what I had read earlier was that Erdogan was not in agreement with the military component that was taking over these areas. So,
I mean, there's some weird stuff out there. Let's see. Turkey coup defeated. Far-right leader Samish Hidenik captured after attempting to raise Nazi flag in Istanbul.
I've got the AJE feed up, and they're running all kinds of footage. you should see their chat stream. Damn.
What is AJE, Scott?
Al Jazeera English.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, yeah.
They have a live feed going right now, and they're showing the Tangum Square. And with people all in the street and all that, but they've got the crawls. Official says plane of Turkish president landed. Government blamed movement of U.S. based cleric for the coup. There's lots going on here.
U.S. backed cleric or U.S. based?
U.S. backed.
Well, it's probably safe to assume that. Just as in this country, at, say, the U.S. Air Force Academy in the Colorado Springs area, there's a contingent of radical Christian people in charge, that there would also be a contingent of religious radicals in Turkey who are somehow tied into whatever the hell's going on, you know, vis-a-vis the coup in Turkey. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm trying to follow the...
I'm just wondering how the United States will screw up the response. I mean, I'm sorry, I just am. Because we are terrible at foreign policy. Diplomacy? No, sorry. We never even played the game.
Well, when it comes time to make a statement, the president will speak slowly. That is one thing over the years that has begun to really bug me about President Obama. I don't have a problem with him being thoughtful or rational or calm, cool, and collected. But when he speaks, especially if it's not a prepared message, pick up the fucking pace. I mean, it reminds me of that old Bob and Ray comedy routine about interviewing the representative from the slow talkers of America society. I mean, good God, maybe it's just me, but I guess the other extreme is Trump rattling off with little thought at all. Somewhere in the middle, there's probably what they call your happy medium.
Somewhere in there's diplomacy, which seems to be lacking these days.
Or some kind of overall, you know, cohesive strategy here, a cohesive foreign policy strategy. We seem to, like, careen from crisis to crisis without really knowing what the hell we're doing. And often making matters a lot worse. I mean, just witness, you know, the invasion of Iraq in 2003. Mm-hmm. You know, they would welcome us as liberators. This war will be over with in... I don't know if it's going to be 2 weeks or 2 months, you know, but, you know, 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months. I think Rumsfeld was quoted as saying, it's like, come on, you know, give me a break. But we have such hubris. That's the problem. We think we can control things. And, you know, the more we try to control things, the less in control we actually are, which is actually the way it works in, you know, just in interpersonal relationships as well, you know.
Well, we've got bigger bombs than they do.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, here's the official statement of the United States. Emergency message for U.S. citizens. Turkish uprising. U.S. Embassy Ankara informs U.S. citizens that shots fired and explosions have been heard in Ankara and both bridges in Istanbul. The Bosphorus and Fatih Sultan Mehmet are now closed. Martial law and a curfew have been imposed in Turkey. All flights at Atatürk Istanbul Airport have been suspended. We urge U.S. citizens to contact family and friends to let them know you're safe. We've seen reports that social media is blocked, but you can contact friends and family by email, telephone, or SMS. We encourage U.S. citizens to shelter in place and do not go to the U.S. Embassy or consulates at this time. Monitor local press for updates, avoid areas of conflict, and exercise caution if you are in the vicinity of any military or security forces.
Well, one good thing, in the course of nearly 8 years now, not once has President Obama found it necessary to become President Codpiece and do a carrier landing and, you know, with a mission accomplished statement, a banner in the back. So at least he has sense enough not to repeat that madness.
Yeah, well, he was never a pilot.
Here's an interesting tweet. Our Lord and Savior, the benevolent leader of Turkey, has landed in Istanbul. Please don't kill me.
Is that from Erdogan?
No, that's apparently from some guy who doesn't want Erdogan to kill him.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was from Little Gray there for a second, Bob.
I've learned not to trust Little Gray.
Oh, that's just hurtful.
Yeah, Bob, if you can get, I'm watching the AJE feed, and they've got a live feed happening in Taksim Square. And right now, there's people running and hitting the street and armed vehicles and all kinds of odd behavior going on. Plus, they've got a crawl going, and this is a live feed.
I'm just scrolling down through the Twitter feed. There's lots of Erdogan has landed in Istanbul, but not much in the way of him having said anything. Or let's see, F-16s still doing low passes in Istanbul. F-16s, how you like that? I'll be darned.
Hey, what was Erdogan out of the country, Bob, when this started?
Yeah, apparently one remark I saw was that he had gone for the heart.
He was on vacation on the Black Sea.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. Sonic booms from fighter jet shaking house. Fucking terrifying. People may be mistaking sonic booms for explosions. Fighter jets are flying really close to scare people in Istanbul now. No, we won't give in.
Turkish president says those behind coup attempt will pay heavy price.
Yeah, he said that in his FaceTime message.
Yeah, he's
what a world, what a
again.
World, what a world.
Are we having fun yet?
Yeah, no kidding. Let's see. See, 1916 Redux. Could Nietzsche have got it right after all? Steve writes, when any government says it controls almost anything, it usually can't control its own bowels. Need to get away from the ideology versus idiot box, folks. And isn't religion just a cover for everything else that can be wrong anyway? Well, no, religion is the lever that people desiring power most often try to grab. Hence, well, in this case, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini naming a religious maniac as his running mate.
Hey, Bob, I got a question for you.
Yes, yeah, Steve.
Isn't it common in that region for the military to take control over the government when they deem warranted?
There have been three military coups and one intervention in Turkey in the 20th century.
I'm not talking just Turkey in general, just that whole region over there. I mean, didn't we see something similar happen?
I Yeah, you know, the one thing that I saw written, I think it was from the New York Times, is that the Turkish military has traditionally been the bulwark against the secular bulwark against weirdo religious mania. But that may not be the case because apparently there are right wing elements in the Turkish military too.
But in the Egyptian uprising, didn't the military kind of do the same thing?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, then that's the question I'm
Because we've taught them to do that.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to pick your brain because I'm not that astute when it comes to this subject. I just wanted to get your input on that.
I'm woefully I know my ancient history in that region. Up to about Kemal Ataturk, and after that, you've got the German alliance, the Austro-Hungarian German alliance with Turkey in the First World War, that led to the final breakup of the Ottoman Empire after the First World War, which led to some really interesting map making, map drawing, lots of straight lines. drafted out by Messrs. Sykes and Picot, and without a damn bit of input from people who actually lived where they were drawing all those lines. I mean, there are three things in the Middle East that are basically and I guess we kind of include Turkey, but it's not. But there are three events in the 20th century that contributed to the chaos that owns that place. One is Sykes-Picot. Two is the Balfour Declaration and the eventual creation of Israel. Three is the U.S. insistence on supporting the right-wing authoritarian coup in Iran in 1952, 54? You know what I'm talking about. And between those three things, the region has been roiled into permanent chaos ever since. Among other things, the people who helped the British fight an assault from the rear on the Ottoman Empire, namely the Arabians, the House of King of Jordan. The King of Jordan is the scion of that family. They got screwed. They should have had control of the Arabian Peninsula. The British put one of them on the throne of Iraq, and Jordan got the other one. And they got screwed when the royal, noble, majestic, gracious house of Ibn Saud decided that they wanted to control Mecca and Medina instead. And we said, hey, maybe we can do business with them. That's a good dollar.
Well, thanks, Bob. My point was, it's not out of the realm of possibility for that region, for the military, to say, hey, government's too powerful, we're going to step in. That would never happen.
Or maybe government's a little, or government's too Islami. Yeah. I mean, the whole point, I mean, you have to remember that Kemal Ataturk the phrase, the Young Turks, is not, the Young Turks does not refer to a YouTube television program. The Young Turks refers to a phenomenon that struck the Ottoman Empire in its waning days, led by Kemal Ataturk, who insisted on dragging his people into modernity to the point where he banned the wearing of the fez. He banned the magic headgear that you had to wear to make Allah love you. And tried to make Turkey a modern nation state. And that dynamic tension has existed ever since. But it got sane enough that NATO said, yeah, sure, the last time we excluded Turkey, they signed on with the Germans, Let's make Turkey a part of NATO. I mean, we can put some missiles there. And then we can keep an eye on the mess that Monsieur Sykes and Pico made. And Balfour. Break it up, Sparky. It's not often Sparky's connection falls apart.
Sparky's he's the chief operator here.
Can you hear me now?
Sort of, yeah.
Sort of.
Okay.
Nope.
Sparky, you sound like Mr. Roboto. I heard that song last night, by the way.
Or Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Domo rigolto, Mr. Roboto.
Oh,
hey, we don't sing here.
That's a favorite. You got to sing that to the crowd.
Yeah, because see, if we're gonna sing, I actually got a lyric earlier today from Dwayne.
Well, now see, I can sing because I'm allowed to sing. I have a
How about now?
He's the only one
that's allowed to sing.
Sound good now, Spark. Go on, man.
What do you got?
Oh, I was just saying Incirlik base in Turkey, been an Air Force base since the 60s.
Right.
I worked with guys in the electric shop in 9th FMS that had served there.
Well, that's another place on my list of places that I will now I'm now coming to grips with the fact that I will never see.
Military term bumfuck Egypt.
Yeah.
Well, Incirlik was next to bumfuck Egypt.
It's just down the road. I'd love to see the ruins of the Greek cities of Asia Minor. There's so much history tied up in there. No, I got a note from Dwayne earlier today, Dwayne in Fraxylvania. Sing a song of Trump Pence, no use asking why, 40 million bigots spitting in our eye. And when we started weeping, they all began to sing, America is great again, now bow before our king. Yeah, I mean, that's restaurant quality. Right?
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. He should go on tour.
There you go. You should. Sing a song of Trump Pence. I didn't know the rest of it, so I can't sing it.
Yeah. Let's see. 13 minutes before the hour, we still have $160 to go to close out the week in fundraising. I get so damn sick of mentioning that stuff. I hate talking about it. I wish it would almost be worth it to me to have an advertising contract for goddamn Bose Wave radios. But no, it wouldn't be, because, you know. No. Lumber Liquidators, General Steel Buildings, Auric Vacuum Cleaners. Hey, you can have hair again.
Oh, Bob, going back into DJ mode.
But no, we've got $160 to go, and it would be nice not to start more in Monday in a freaking hole. But, you know, that's where it is. So, I'm watching the Twitter timeline.
I'm seeing people in the AJE chat, and they're saying that CNN is showing completely different feeds of everything's under control, everything's nothing going on, but the
well,
AJE
is
still...
Right, that's because CNN has CNN Turkey.
They're showing everything calm, and, you know, it's all done and settled, and I'm watching AJE, and there's people scrambling everywhere.
Well, that's
while the chat line is running, and it's, you know, don't go here, don't go there. This is happening. This is.
Let's see. I've got a sarcastic Frenchman here. Le putsch est fini, tu es sous contrôle. Ha ha ha. Oui oui, tu parles. I take that to be sarcasm. The putsch is ended. All is under control. Ha ha. Yeah, yeah. So you say. And what's interesting is that the people is that Recep Erdogan called the was the one who called the people into the streets, you know, to potentially be shot at. Because this guy ain't necessarily a good guy.
Did we put him in power?
We've certainly supported him while he's been in power.
Yeah, well, a couple of nukes will help.
Well, I mean, see, there's this delicate dynamic tension there, because you may recall that for the last year or so, Russians and Turks have been taking pot shots at each other in Syria. This, I might add, is not a good idea.
I'm seeing it's the other thing I'm seeing in the feed here is there's a bunch of people saying, "Putin, we need you now." This is not a fun time.
In Istanbul, call to prayer sounding to encourage people to fight in the streets.
The live stream from CNN Turkey is just showing an empty studio.
That might be CNN's way of saying that they are being impeded from reporting.
Here's my take, and maybe I'm a cockeyed optimist, but I think if every man, woman, and child over 18 on the planet were issued a good quality joint, and by that I mean a cannabis-loaded joint, the only in-the-street sort of moments that would be prevalent would be the Martha Reeves and the Vandellas dancing in the street kind of moment.
That and a run to the pizza joint.
You know, I mean, this world has gone crazy, and the world's probably fine. It's some of the occupants who I question.
Just fired up the vaporizer.
There you go.
Well, I've been having, for the last week, I've been having some back problems, and I've hesitated to fire up the little pipe that I have, but I've got all my paperwork in order out here in California, and I think that may be the next thing. Just turn off the TV, crank up the tunes, and fire up the pipe, because I'm sick of this. I'm just... You know, I woke up this morning, turned on the TV, and all this shit came on, you know, from the thing in France last night, and now this thing in Turkey today, and Trump did this or said that, or Mike Pence, and I got to be this close, he said, using his thumb and forefinger about a quarter inch apart, from taking on a I don't give a good goddamn about any of this sort of attitude, and that's so unlike me, because I do care. I care deeply. But sometimes you look at it, you know, just hang my head and sigh kind of moment is what I was having. So maybe it's time to unearth the medically sanctioned cannabis and turn up the tunes and go for it.
Let's see. I've got a person with some paranoia here on Twitter. Anyone think coup was ordered by NATO in response to Erdogan repairing relations with Russia, Israel, Syria? And of course, here's a photograph of Erdogan waving his Quran. They thump. That's what they thump over there. Unconfirmed F-16s bombed Ataturk International Airport in Istanbul. Let's see. Mark in Florida tells me CNN Turkey just lost to soldiers. Cops arresting soldiers are following Erdogan orders.
HAE just lost one of their feeds. They just came back up on Taksim Square, which I'm not familiar with the area, so it doesn't mean that much. But they had one running from looked like the airport, and it suddenly went to kind of stock footage.
Oh, let's see. My French is not quite good enough. Vive Erdogan, vive un président pro-Daesh. tout le monde à la aide de mes dès cette nuit choquant. That appears to be a pro-is-is tweet. Or it sure sounds like it. This is fascinating.
All right, Bob, I'll let you go. I'm taking up enough of your time.
I think, it's time for us all to go.
Right, that's why I'm. That's where I'm.
Yeah, the conversation will continue off air.
Okay.
And you know, is Malloy live tonight? Do we know,
no
Sparky?
I was gonna head over to FYI Live.
Tomorrow's Saturday, Bob.
No, Malloy's a repeat.
Okay.
Oh,
on his, website. It's classic Malloy show tonight.
I was gonna head over and
kids
see,
night.
See what Tom is to see what Tom is screeching about.
By all means enjoy and give him my regards. Well, thanks everybody. I appreciate the conversation. It's kind of been all over the place. It's interesting when it's interesting, yeah.
I didn't even get to tell you about, you know, the algae down here in Florida, how it's spread everywhere now.
Is it? It's everywhere now? Oh, yummy.
It's the entire East Coast.
Well, apparently it's made it to Shasta Lake in California.
Yes, I saw that. California's got it, and they've got it up in Michigan, too. So there, it's going everywhere.
And they have it in Idaho. They have it all. The blue-green algae is going everywhere. So we did a segment on it on Wednesday. So second hour of Morning Jewels. It's up in the archives if anyone wants to see it.
Stephen New York says, be well all, just leaving the office, entering Subway. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. And that seems like good advice. Enjoy however you can. Thank you, everybody who joined in on the conversation. Thank you to Steve and Ms. Karen and Cletus. Thank you to Bill. Thank you very kindly for jumping in on the fundraising this evening. We'll begin Monday with $160 plus the $200 we need to raise every day. And there we go. I'll be looking forward to Monday. Maybe we'll actually understand what was going on during the course of this program by then. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to you all for spending your precious finite time engaged in this long-running conversation, this little experiment in independent broadcasting. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks go out always to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 oops, I've got some audio running there that doesn't need to be running. Goodbye. Always, 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 Gina. It's all for you.